It's time for the gardening show.
I have a European beech tree.
I've got one, too, and I dearly love it. So.
Oh, I love it, too. I hug it once in a while. Don't believe it. What the heck, you know?
Never hurts.
Got a question for your gardening expert, Dr. Dean Crosscoff? Call 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957.
I have a rose bush, and it is 52 years old.
Horticulturist Dr. Dean Crosscoff is your host on the program filled with helpful information on lawn care, tree problems, gardens, crops, pests, everything and anything gardeners need to know.
I'm hoping that maybe I can get it moved without it dying.
Dean spent almost 30 years teaching horticulture at Michigan State University, and he served as the Integrated Crop Management Agent for Southeast Michigan's MSU Extension Service. The Gardening Show and your calls coming up next on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Crosscoff.
Welcome to another afternoon in the D, I guess. And it is the Gardening Show, and it is live. And I was off for the last 2 weeks, and I appreciate all the people who called and emailed me. But if you want to join our conversation, we can talk. 1-800-859-0957. Or if you can't get through, and I think today's going to be a busy day, just drop look at my email page or my webpage, and you can email me, www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And down in the bottom of that, you can find a form. And Pat and South Lyon, Mary and Roseville, Paul and Clinton Township, and a whole lot of other people email me. And we will try to get to those emails just as fast as I can. A couple of things, though. One of the things, if you happen to be looking for something to do tomorrow, especially if you have young children, Beepalooza, which is this whole thing about with kids and bees and all this kind of thing, at the Horticulture Gardens at Michigan State University, tomorrow afternoon, 1 to 4 p.m., you don't have to be a kid or even bring a kid. That's not necessary. It's just everything about bees, plants, and pollinators, all kinds of things, and the opportunity to talk to some of the most knowledgeable people about bees in the world. That's Beepalooza Sunday afternoon, June the 7th, in the Horticulture Gardens at MSU's campus. So check out that. Really, it's going to be a fun time. 1-800-859-0957. And let's see. Okay, let's go to the emails real quick while the lines load up. Pat in South Lyon has a grass that crowds out everything else. It lays down like a mat, and it's taking up about a third of your yard. Pat, I think it's bent grass, which is the stuff they use on golf courses. It could be a couple other ones, but I think it's probably more likely bent grass. The problem is, you say you don't want to use Roundup. The problem is you got to kill the roots. So if you want to just dig it up, and what I would do is right now, if you want to, there's two different ways to do this, one of which is just don't do anything with it until fall, because that's really the best time to reseed. But if you need to do something with it now, what I do is go use a side cutter. Rent it from your local hardware store or wherever, and just cut it out, lift everything up, and take it off your property. The idea is to get the roots out of there. If you just rototill it up, all you did was just propagate them, because these plants propagate from the roots. Then I would use a cheap annual ryegrass mix, the real cheap stuff, just to keep it green until the fall. And you can also go in and check if this grass always got taken care of, and you can always dig out little clumps as you go over the summertime. And then in the fall, just go in and retill it, and then seed it with a good quality grass, because the annual ryegrass is going to die anyhow as soon as it frosts. So I think that would be the approach I would take. Okay, Mary in Roseville was listening a couple of weeks ago and missed a product. Mary, the product you're talking about is Bonide Cleanup. It's a systemic weed killer. But I like to remind everybody out there that we have podcasts. So if you miss something, you can go to the website and just download it, or you don't even have to do that. You can just listen to it. And again, the website is www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And you can look right there and clutch anything that you missed. Okay, let's go to the lines. Let's go to Bob in Southgate. Sylvia in Riverview, stay on the line. You're going to be up next. Bob, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Yes, I have junipers for my front shrubbery.
Sure.
And I've got thistles coming up there, gangbusters about a foot high.
Oh, yeah.
They told me not to use ortho weed be gone because I'll kill the junipers. What could I use to just kill the thistles in there and just try to save the bushes? Is there anything at all?
Well, it's not how what you use, it's how you use it. Because there's nothing that's specific for the thistle that won't kill the juniper. So the idea is that you got to just treat the thistles. Now, the trick is that you got to get the roots out. So is this a place that you can get a weed whacker or something and just cut the thistles off as they come up?
Pardon me?
Can you cut the thistles off as they come up through the junipers?
Yeah, I can get a grass cutter there.
Yeah, okay, here's what I would do. Just keep them cut until the fall. And then in August, you let them grow. And they will grow, I'll guarantee you. And once they get up above the top, about the middle of September, what you go in with is the materials in glyphosate, which is the old Roundup. And instead of spraying it, you use an applicator and just brush it on the leaves of the thistles only. That way it doesn't contact the junipers. It'll move down into the roots of the thistle and then kill the thistle. And in September, middle of September, end of September, and then first week in October, maybe, or you can stretch that out a little bit if we have a late fall. Yeah. But up to that point, I would just cut them. Now, you can use this Roundup material the same way if you can't get at them, and it'll just burn the top off, but they'll just keep sprouting back. And it's easier if you can use a weed cutter or something, you know, a weed whacker or something like that in there. It's probably easier to do it that way.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. 1-800-859-0957. Paul in Clinton Township emailed me, and he used one of the products from my sponsors, and it didn't work, to be very honest with you. Bonide Go Away applied it on his lettuce and kale and things like that, and the rabbits or something just took it. Bob, I used Bonide Go Away, and I've had good results with it, but that doesn't mean just the situation, obviously, in my garden is different than in your garden. And many times, no detriment to any product out there. It just depends on the situation, how many pests you have, what kind, and how hungry they are. If you want to use another material, there's lots of other things, hot pepper wax, liquid fence, and many of them can be sprayed right on the plant. And that's usually on these young plants that you've got time before harvest. How you can do it, you spray it right on the plant. And that way it doesn't taste good or repels them. So I'm sorry that the product didn't work. Try some others. There's lots of them out there. 1-800-859-0957. Or email me at www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow.com.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957. Or, again, the website, www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And I've got lines open, so if you've been waiting, of course I was off the last 2 weeks, I'm live again, so we can talk. Also, though, Laura and Troy, Patricia in Highland, and Marianne in Auburn Hills, you emailed me, and I will be getting to your questions as soon as I possibly can. But let's go to the lines. Let's go to Sylvia in Riverview. And Rose in Upper Sandusky, you're up next. So, Sylvia, welcome
Hi.
To The Gardening Show.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I have, well, it's in my daughter's yard, and I do her gardening.
Okay.
She has arborvitae as a hedge along the back of the lot.
Sure.
And rhubarb has come into the yard, and it is all over, especially between the arborvitae, and I don't know how to treat it to kill it because of the shallow roots of the arborvitae.
Yeah. I guess the question is, where did the rhubarb come from?
We have no idea.
Now, Sylvia, I want to, don't take this as an insult, and it's going to sound that way, but I apologize for it. It's not. Are you sure it's rhubarb?
Well, it has a stalk on it.
Yeah.
And it has a large leaf.
Okay, how big is the leaf right now?
Well, some of them are very large, maybe 5 or 6 inches across.
Oh, I don't think you've got rhubarb.
No?
No. And I'm drawing a blank on what the weed is.
I'll be darned.
Well, it looks, you know, don't feel bad and don't feel, and again, I didn't mean to be at all insulting
because it's easy
to be confused.
No, I didn't even take it that way.
Well, and I'm just drawing a blank right now on the weed. It has a leaf that looks a little bit like rhubarb, but it's more pointed. Rhubarb's leaves are pretty round and rustly.
This is like a calla lily leaf.
That isn't rhubarb.
Okay.
Nope. And the leaves are about that size. The stems are, size of your thumb a little bit right now, maybe a little smaller.
Yeah.
And they tend to go flat rather than straight up. Sort of flat.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I'm drawing, Sylvia, I apologize.
Well, that's okay.
I can see it because I've got it in my yard. Anyhow, it's a weed.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it's been there. It's a perennial.
Yes, I know. They come back, and there's more this year than there were last.
Yeah, and I think the common name is Doc, D-O-C-K. I may be wrong. Look, on about Wednesday or so, I'm going to go back and get my memory cells working again.
Okay.
And I will post something on this weed on my website, but wait till about Wednesday, because it takes me a little while to get my act together once in a while. Here's the trick: are they growing up through the arbs, or is it just underneath?
Well, underneath, but in between them.
Yeah,
you know they've taken over the space in between.
Yeah. Can you get at them with something like a weed whacker or something just cut the leaves out?
I just crawled in there yesterday and started breaking the stems off and the leaves as much as I could.
Okay.
Some of them are tough.
Oh, they are. This one is a tough weed.
Yeah.
And the breaking off, you almost have to dig them out, and then they'll grow back in about 4 weeks.
Oh, I know. You can't dig them out. I mean, it seems like the roots are going to China.
Okay, that's not rhubarb. Rhubarb has a very shallow root, and so
when you
pulled it out, if you pulled on it, the whole clump would have come out.
Oh, no.
Now, this is that weed, and I think it's Doc, but don't quote me on that one. Check my website. Now, here's how you're going to attack it. Rather than getting in there all the time, I would go in and just whack it back a little bit just to keep it out. You know, it's been there a couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
Let it go for another year or so. Thank you. I just got in you may have heard my skip there.
Yes.
Mike in Deckerville, who is called in, and I appreciate this, Mike. It is burdock. Thank you, Mike.
Oh.
Now, I'm glad Mike knows what he's talking about when I didn't. But anyhow, I will still put it up. Sylvia. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is that we're going to use herbicides, glyphosate or Roundup. Are you comfortable with doing that?
Yes, I am.
Right.
Now, I was listening when you spoke to the other man from Southgate.
Right.
Should I be applying that individually because of being around the arborvitae?
The same approaches, and if you can get what I do, I've got arthritis and some issues.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've got is an applicator, which looks like a hockey stick or a golf club, except it's got a hollow handle and a sponge on the end where it's changed. And you fill the handle, according to the directions, with the herbicide, and then you just rub it against the leaves so you don't have to get in there. And it protects the other plants from getting in contact. You can either let the burdock go and just, it's there. Or you can go in a couple of times during the summer and just cut it off with a knife or something.
All right.
So to keep it down. But in August, let it grow because you need some leaves.
Yes.
So about middle of September, end of September, middle of October.
Okay.
Something like that, depending on the fall. And that should knock out about 95%. You'll get a few growing back next spring, and then you just do it again.
All right.
Now,
I knew you'd have the answer.
Well, if I could figure out what plant it is, I would be doing very well. And Mike, whoever called in, sincerely appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you. 1-800-859-0957. And thanks to Mike Stetz for putting that through to me. Sometimes it just didn't click. I knew what it was. I just couldn't get the name. But anyhow, we'll get take care of that. Let's see if I can do a better job with Rose in Upper Sandusky. Rose, welcome to the gardening show.
Thank you. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I have allium bulbs that someone gave me 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
And I don't know the name of them. Maybe Globemaster. There's a big one, four or five feet tall.
Yeah, there's a whole group of those, and they're just wonderful. I love them.
Right. Well, in the past, those people told me to dig them in the fall and then replant them, which I have done. When they have a flower and you dig them, they come up two bulbs.
Yep.
The bulbs separate where the flower comes up.
Yep.
And about the time the flower is blooming, the leaves die off.
Okay.
Last summer, we had a really hot summer, and I think the summer before, we had a really hot summer.
Yeah, we did.
Last year, the flowers were not very big, and the bulbs, when I planted them before, were pretty small.
Okay.
And then the flowers were not big. Last fall, when I dug them, they were still not very big, and they're starting to bloom now, and the flowers are still not very big.
Okay.
Can I put some kind of fertilizer on early in the spring and help them grow bigger?
Two things that I would think about, Rose. One of which is these plants, to get the full size of the bulb, needs full sun. So
I have that.
Okay, that would be helpful. The second thing is that you hit on is the water stress. We had a hot, dry summers, especially in August when the bulbs are stressed out. So keep them moist even when the foliage is gone. And the third thing, and yeah, any of the, like a 10-10-10, an 8-8-8, something like that, lightly scattered over it once the foliage is, when the foliage is up or just before they break through, would be a big help.
Okay.
And then give them plenty of space. You know, but the neat thing about it is you're getting daughter bulbs, which means that they're still healthy. It's not a disease issue, because if it was a disease, you wouldn't get the daughter bulbs. So it's just a size issue. And I would probably lean more to the water stress issue than anything else. Fertilizer helps, but water really is the key. So now, are you down in the clays down there in Upper Sandusky or on the sand?
I have sand.
Okay. Then you might want to use, the fertilizer probably wouldn't be a bad idea, but you'll probably have to water a little more frequently than you may be used to.
Okay.
Sounds like they're going under a little bit of water stress. But that's the approach I would take, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Beautiful plants. Allium, if you've never looked at them, it's an onion. But boy, are they gorgeous. 1-800-859-0957 or the gardening show about www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. I'll be right back.
Now, back to the gardening show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957 or my website, www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow, and you can email me. And Laura in Troy, Patricia in Highland, and Marianne in Auburn Hills, Scott in Pontiac, Fran in Manchester, and David in Dryden. Hopefully I'll get to your emails today. Just a reminder, if you didn't catch the first part of the show, Beepalooza, tomorrow afternoon, 1 to 4, in the Horticulture Gardens at Michigan State University, right behind the, if you cross from the vet clinic, if you know where that is, on that side of campus, it's going to be fun and a great learning opportunity for kids and adults. Exhibits on bees, plants, pollinators, live bumblebee colony, which is really fun to look at. All this kind of stuff, and answer any questions. And you might want to talk about some brand new research that was just published this week from Jeffrey Hong, who is a bee expert, about this thing about what's possibly contributing to the loss of bees, not only the honeybees, the ones we cultivate, but the bumblebees and all the natural predators or pollinators. So all of that will be available at Beepalooza. Right now, though, if you want to talk about something besides bees, I've got a line open. 1-800-859-0957. Okay, let's go to the emails. Laura and Troy got a question about grub treatments. And a couple weeks ago, I mentioned a great article by Dr. Dave Smidley about each year he goes through and looks at what grub control materials are out there and which ones work and which ones don't. And Laura had a question, is that the one she used, which is GrubX, an effective treatment? Yes, it works quite well. If it's applied correctly at the correct time, which is coming up pretty soon, end of June, and you water it in. Now, this is a very effective material. It's a little bit slow acting, though. Probably should get it in now. So yeah, the ones that don't work, they still have grubs on the label, and one of them has a picture of a grub on the label, which always irritated me. If you look at the ingredients label, you know, the little part on the back, usually where you have to look for it, the active ingredient, the common name, will end in R-I-N. This stuff doesn't work for grubs. It works for everything else on the labels. Excellent material for that. The problem is it gets hung up. It doesn't move down into the roots where the grubs are. Now, why is this important, besides that you want to control grubs, is that Laura has a problem with moles. And she was wondering if she had a grub problem, and that's why they're in her yard. Probably not, Laura. It could be. The grubs, if you did have a grub issue, if you had dead spots in your yard, things like that, lots of Japanese beetle and European chafer around, it's possible, and they would be tunneling through to get at them, and that's why they're there. I got a sneaking suspicion, though, with no real evidence of that from what Bishop bring me your email, that you put the treatment down, which should take care of the grubs. However, this material is quite safe for earthworms. And earthworms are the primary food source for moles. And we don't want to kill the earthworms off, so what do you do? Well, a couple of things, one of which is the first thing to do is the castor oil products. It's a derivative of castor oil. There's a whole bunch of them out there. And you didn't tell me which mole you have. If you have the tunnels up on top, that's the product that works quite well on these guys. If you have the volcanoes that are coming up, that's a different type of mole, different species. And that one, the repellents don't work very well. They're too deep. The trick with the castor oil products, they're cheap. It's worth a try. Spray it on your yard and then water it in. Again, it's one of those materials that you've got to water it in. And let's see what happens. Usually, if that doesn't work, then we go to the good old-fashioned trap. And the idea with that is the first thing in the morning you go up, out in your yard, you walk down all the tunnels and see which one pops up. They don't use all the tunnels all the time. So you got to know which one they're using and put your trap there. Now, of course, if you have children or pets, especially inquisitive dogs, traps can present an issue. So therefore, then the last resort is the baits, and there's two or three very effective ones out there. I have issues. These are toxic materials, so make sure you follow the directions very, very carefully, Laura. Make sure that they can't, no dog can get into them, the kid next door, those kind of issues. The most effective one, apparently right on the market from the research I've seen, is the one that looks like an earthworm, and I really wish they hadn't done that. Again, it's to me, it's asking for trouble. However, these will work. Follow the directions. You dig a hole. You put them in. The trick with it, Laura, is never touch the bait with your bare hands. Use plastic disposable gloves. The earthworm has probably the most sensitive cells or nasal cells, if you want to call about smelling, in the animal kingdom. That's how they locate their prey underground, which if you think about it, it's a pretty neat trick. So they can really... If you touch that bait, they know you've touched it, and they won't touch it. So always, always use plastic disposable gloves. Follow the directions and try that. And I'll bet, Laura, it's the earthworms they're after, not any grubs. 1-800-859-0957. And if you want to check my website out, www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow, lots of things. I really put a lot of information up there. We're clearing up some backlog here. Got some fire blight out there. For those of you who are growing crab apples and things, you may see it. Interesting article on azalea bark scale, which seems to be coming back again. I've seen it around for years, and then it seems to be getting worse periodically. If you're interested in monarchs like I am, there's tremendous number of ornamental milkweeds out there. Be a little careful. Got a great article with, from Duke Elsner on a, which ones you might want to grow in your garden. I'm putting in a butterfly garden this year. Pine needle scale are coming around. I put an article on that. For those of you who are into vegetables, flea beetles, you've probably seen them already. Colorado potato beetle is out. We'll have information there. And again, this one's interesting. Garden myths. All those stories that somebody told you that probably aren't true. Hopefully you didn't hear it here. 1-800-859-0957. I've got open lines, and that's why I'm giving that phone number. I know some people were kind of frustrated. I heard that I wasn't around. So here's your opportunity, 1-800-859-0957. Just to call me. What other things? Email. Oh, right. Turf, got some, hawkweed. I know, it's a weed. I love them. I've got a spot of them in my backyard. I don't fertilize the area, so it's just kind of, you know, I don't really care, but I like hawkweed. It's a weed, but it's pretty. Also, slime molds, if you've never seen a slime mold, these are really cool. Some other interesting, and of course, seed heads. We talked about seed heads on grass a while ago. So, 1-800-859-0957. And, of course, for Sylvia out there, I will put my information up on Burdock. Okay, let's go back to the emails. Patricia in Highland Park was asking, is there a species of maple that's safe to plant here in in southeast Michigan? And I don't know how I'd interpret safe, Patricia. You know, most of us, and I'm one of those, we push the envelope because, boy, that's a beautiful plant. I know I've got a protected site. And the last two winters pretty kind of proved that wrong. But anyhow, many times you wonder, is this plant worth it? I know I'm taking a risk. But is it avail? You know, is the beauty that I'm going to have worth the risk? And I think usually it is. Now, you were wondering maples with red leaves, and there's a whole group of crimson maples varieties out there, and Japanese red maple. Now, the Japanese red maple is the one that's marginal in this area. So I'm going to put on, Patricia, check my website out, but I will put a whole list of all kinds of good stuff on red maples out there to help you pick which one you'd like to have. They're beautiful, beautiful trees. They really are. The Japanese red maple, you got to, especially the one that's, you know, the really delicate one, you've really got to be careful on the site. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Pat in Memphis. Pat, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, Doctor. Always a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you.
I would like to know about growing pumpkins a little bit. I've never done it before, and I'm getting a lot of mixed information from those who have tried it, some who have had luck, some who have failed.
Okay.
What kind of varieties do you think I should try starting out with this weekend?
Pat, are you going to grow them for the, like, jack-o'-lanterns, or are you going to grow them to make pies, or what?
I'd like to throw a few in for pies, but primarily for selling for jack-o'-lanterns up at the side of the road in the fall.
Okay, you're a little bit late, but anyhow, here's the go. There's a whole group of jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. They're medium-sized ones, and I'll, again, it won't help you this weekend, but I will put them up on the website. They're the yellow ones. The reason I ask you about the cooking, that's the white one, which is a totally different organism, so you can use the yellow ones for cooking. They're not really great. They don't have the flavor, and they certainly aren't as meaty as the white ones. But they don't make good, the white ones don't make good jack-o'-lanterns, so you're kind of between a rock and a hard spot. And I'm trying to think. There's three or four different varieties. You're in Memphis. Are you going to grow the seeds, or are you going from seed, or are you going to grow plants?
I have a source for quite a few different varieties of starters. So I'm a little head start there. I don't have to use seed if I don't want to.
Pat, can you stay on the line? I'm going to get background music needs. I need to talk. We've got to take a break, and I'll come back. Cindy in Chesterfield, you're up next right after we get back from the break. So stay tuned. The Gardening Show will be right back.
Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Before we go back to Pat in Memphis, I'd like to thank two critical people, and that, of course, is Mike Stetz, the pleasant voice on answering the phones today, and Rich Lisinski, who is our executive producer and running the technical end of it. So both of you, I appreciate all that you do. And for those of you out there, they do wonders to keep me on the air, so I really appreciate it. Let's go back to Pat in Memphis, line one, if you don't mind. There we go. Pat, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, I apologize for not being able to give you any varieties right off the top of my head. But here's what I would do if you're out looking this time. Make sure that they're a jack-o'-lantern type, and there's many of them.
Yes.
The other thing, more important thing, is that you got to... Have you ever grown pumpkins before or cucumbers?
No, I'm a rookie on the pumpkins. I grow squash and cucumbers
okay.
and stuff. But not.
Well, they're all the same family, so they've kind of got some of the same issues. One of which is that you can over-fertilize them, so they get great big leaves, and they really don't set fruit that well. And that's you want to put some fertilizer down with them, but not you can side dress as you go. The other thing is that they take a tremendous amount of water, as you well know.
Yes.
The third thing is, and it's just like cucumbers, the first flowers that come out are male, so they'll drop off. And then the next group, and then on out, they're mixed. So you get male and female. If you're going for size, you can go through and take out some of the extra set, you know, especially the real small ones, and that will way keeps the photosynthesis going to the bigger ones in the water, and they get bigger. The other thing is they're pollinated by bees.
Yes.
And if you don't have a bee, do you have a beehive near? Do you have any idea?
I was told I should plan on doing a lot of hand pollinating, Doctor.
I agree with that, definitely. Bees, you know, have a shortage of bees, and to be honest with you, bees don't particularly like to fertilize or to work pumpkins, cucumbers in that group. I don't know why, but they just don't. So they're not especially aggressive. Now, the native pollinators, the bumblebees, tend to be more aggressive about it. So hopefully you've got some of them around, and they'll do that. Good pollination. Do that, you know, the fertilization. And then we have downy mildew out there, which hits pumpkins and all the cucurbits. And I would start a spray program, which is chlorothalonil. I think it's a weekly every 10 days, whatever. I can't remember the interval. As when they just start to get their first leaves. And then you're just going in and spraying every, follow the interval. There's a restriction on how many times you could put it on. But it's a protectant.
Yes.
And unless, do you happen to have, are you a certified applicator?
I don't think you'd be called that. No, it's just kind of a...
There's some materials out there that are probably more effective on downy mildew, but they require a certified applicator license to get. So chlorothalonil is available everywhere. So,
yes.
Okay, so the disease control, water is the most important one, and the fertilizer, and then just, you know, keep the size type of thing up with the if you have to go in and pollinate. And then hope and pray we got a warm July and August, because if we got a cold, wet one, that there's not much you're going to be able to do.
Everybody tells me the weather is going to be the real big issue.
90%. 90%.
Yes, sir. One quick one before I let you go, please. The question everybody wants to duck that I run this to, I'll throw it to you.
Okay.
Yield. Nobody wants to tell me on a common, ordinary jack-o'-lantern, medium-large pumpkin, how many fruit I should expect to harvest if things grow well.
I'm going to guess about per acre.
About per plant.
Oh, per plant. That I can't answer. I can do it. I can take a guess per acre, which would be about 2 to 3 ton. But I'm guessing. That's a guess.
2 or 3 tons per acre.
Yeah, per acre. That's pushing.
Here's some math.
That's pushing. You're in Memphis.
That'd be a good video.
Call MSU. Here's a two things. One of which I forgot. Are you going to plant these on plastic?
I was thinking about it, but I haven't made up my mind on that one yet.
Do it, or some kind of mulch to keep the weeds down, and that'll help with your irrigation issues.
Yeah, something.
Call up MSU Extension in Monroe County, Macomb County, Genesee, and see if they can get a referral to the vegetable agent in your area. They could give you better numbers on yield than I can.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Very kindly, Doctor.
Hey, appreciate it. Okay, let's see here. Cindy in Chesterfield, Julianne in Clarkston, stay on the line. If I don't get to you, I want to talk to you off the air. We're coming up to the end. I want to catch up on a couple of quick emails. One of which is Fran from Manchester, has oak leaves, orange, that are all kinds of issues with them. Fran, I'm going to put on my website pictures of some oak problems, but none of which really fit what you're seeing. I think it's frost damage, but it could be something else, and that's herbicide damage, especially if you used Roundup or any of those kind of materials late last fall. You need to check with the MSU Extension Service. Either check with their in your county office or just contact the lab on campus and ask them how to send samples in, or they actually may just cause pictures. This came in a couple weeks ago, so Fran, if they look normal now, the leaves are growing out, it's probably just frost damage. That's what I hope, but check my website. I apologize. When I was gone, I picked up a cold. Anyhow, Dave in Dryden has an Austrian pine turning brown from the bottom up. Dave, check my website. Three possibilities. I think it's a needle cast disease, Diploidia, Lophodermum, and the third one, Dothostroma. You need a professional to come in and look at these or send samples to the MSU lab. But I'm going to put the information on my website, and it's www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And don't take this as just to give you an idea of what it may be, but I think it's one of the three, but you need to figure out which one it is exactly so where they can give you the idea, you know, how to control it. They all can be controlled, but it's a spray program, and it has to go on early. All right. Let's go to Cindy in Chesterfield. And Julianne and Clarkson, please stay on the line if we have to end the show. I will talk to you off the air. So, Cindy, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on?
Oh, I'm just wondering about my irises. They come up, they look real good, and then they all fall over, so like they're heavy, top heavy, and they've all been on the ground.
Yeah, so do mine.
Really?
Yeah. Now, two things, one of which, when's the last time you divided them and spaced them out?
They're probably new to that spot 3 years ago.
Shouldn't be a problem with overcrowding. Full sun?
Yep.
Okay. I got my issue. I just tie them up.
You tie them up, okay.
Yeah, okay. And sometimes when they get really crowded in, the stems start to get weak, or when you're really fertilizing them heavily, or if they're right next to the yard and they're getting some of the turf fertilizer, you can get into this top-heavy situation. But usually, because the newer varieties are just so big and they got how many flowers at a time, you know, it's heavy.
Right.
And any wind will just take them off.
Right. And we did have big torrential rains last week.
What I use, you know, my wife says I'm the laziest gardener she's ever seen. What I use is one or two stakes and just tie a string around my clump.
And
something like that. Now, there's no holes at the bottom of the stem because there is a borer that gets into them.
Not that I've noticed. No.
Well, mine, when I got, you know, I looked at mine the other morning and they were just plopped. And I knew what happened because I hadn't gotten out there to tie them up. So I think that's it. It's just a pure top heavy.
Okay.
But, Cindy, think about this. It's a good problem to have. Because, you got beautiful, huge flowers to enjoy. They're so big that they're flopping over. I don't think that's a bad problem. I'd be more worried if you had really little ones. Okay?
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bye. Julianne and Clarkston, stay on the line. Background music means that Rich says, I've got to be out of here. So, whatever. Scott in Pontiac, I really appreciate the professionals coming in and giving me some ideas. Ideas about mulching, getting rid of broadleafs. One of the things, Scott, that you talked about is cutting off broadleaves and things like that. Don't forget mulches after you dig them out. A couple of layers of newspaper with some mulch on it really is helpful. So thank you. I appreciate your input. Hey, background music means I'm out of here. www.wjr.com/thegardeningshow. I'll be back live next week. Have a great week.